Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a partly sunny 33 degrees and feeling very springy here in upstate New York. By the way, happy spring. I saved it for this morning because I thought it was today, but surprise, it was yesterday morning at 6:28 a.m., if I'm not mistaken. So we are already in the throes of spring, and our 2 feet of snow we got last weekend is finally starting to melt. I don't know. I walked out in my slippers in the back, and it was still pretty high up there, so maybe a few more days, but hopefully soon. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Kurzweil, Transhumanism, Addiction, and Analog, Human versus Matrix Slave. That's about what it all boils down to. We've been looking at Kurzweil and how his transhumanism vision of the future that he rolled out, oh, I would even say back in the mid-90s, I remember hearing about Ray and some of his crazy visions, and that his father died and he was vowing to bring him back and all this other stuff. I mean, there was a lot involved back in those days, and we all went, wow, Ray, you know, stick to OCR software and doing voice synthesis. You know, we don't need you coming up with ideas on how to put computers inside of people. But he continued, and then one day Google, with all their wisdom, said, hey, Ray, guess what? We want you to be head of our engineering division in artificial intelligence and language processing. And they gave him the keys to the kingdom. Now, one of the things that we don't realize about this transhumanist movement is that it started quite a long time ago. I am trying to find the link because I did put it in the notes to a New York Times article, and we looked at some of it before, maybe. I don't know. I've had it up quite a few times. Oh, I got to find it, though. It's in here. And it talks about Kurzweil, Larry Page, and the other Google founders all being responsible for creating Singularity University. And Singularity University is kind of like the Kurzweilian mouthpiece now, where they put out a lot of these stories. Wow, I can't find it. I don't know, it's kind of early. My eyes still don't work, but I posted the story and I don't see it here, so we might have to do something else, but I thought it would have been a good one to kick it off with just because it was so old. But Singularity University was a collaboration by Google and Kurzweil, so it is no surprise to me now. See, I didn't realize that back then that they already were all chummy pals, but it does make a lot of sense now that they brought him on board, and he's kind of proven himself, and he's this visionary. But one thing that's interesting is that as we have this transhumanist agenda going on, we also have this longevity agenda. Something interesting yesterday, I had to say, across the interwebs that came up, was we had the death of Rockefeller yesterday. Rockefeller died at a ripe old age of 101 years old. And people are like, nah, it's about time. Good riddance, you know. And I wasn't that mean. It's like, well, you know, the dude, he tried. Maybe in his own sick way. I don't know. Maybe he had his own vision for utopia. But he was involved in a lot of things. We had Ron Stevens on Sunday and did a really good show kind of outlining the tentacles that Rockefeller had into all these different foundations. But one interesting thing, after the show yesterday, I started doing a little bit of digging. And I wanted to see, is like, you know, I mean, Rockefeller was one of the puppeteers of all of it. You know, he was back one of the original robber barons who came in with all the big industrial money to start all these great philanthropic organizations to be good for you and little Johnny, that then could shape the minds and the lives of the world. And that's how they do it. That's how Bill Gates comes in and he's going to cure all of malaria in the world. Well, one of my listeners, good morning, Camille, sent a story to me yesterday, maybe the day before. I finally got to it yesterday. And you guys know, I'm sorry. It just chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. So last night, I finally got a few minutes after all the shows were done. I got a few minutes to sit down quietly and go through messages. But I was very disturbed because guess what? Genetically modified mosquitoes have reared their ugly heads again. We've talked about using mosquitoes as flying vaccinators. We know that was all a part of some of this research they were doing. And then Oxitec spun out of Oxford University and used money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to start tinkering with these mosquitoes as a, of course, potential cure. But remember, a double-edged sword could also be a potential entomological weapon to be utilized if ever need be, wink, in the future. Kind of like those robo-bees from Harvard, you know, on their little advertisement page. They had them advertised as being able to pollinate crops. And then the next bullet point was used as surveillance. You know, it's either A or B. But so we have these new genetically modified mosquitoes going on in Afo Tasso, one of those African countries. But what was beyond disturbing, and I think we'll do a day. We got to get back up because they're ramping up this pandemic mantra again too. But what was interesting is that it was the first time, I'm pretty sure at least in the published realm, it is the first time, but who knows? They do stuff without telling anybody. They're talking about releasing gene drives into nature. Now, anyone who's listened to this show for a while, we did gene drives and looked at CRISPR and looked at Gates and looked at Oxitec and looked at the mosquitoes and looked at the different technologies and how they were going to sterilize these mosquitoes. And looked at some of the diseases as well as Zika and all the ethical considerations and what it means to get quarantined, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the genetic modification and the creation of these mad science pandemics in labs, and how they mutate very quickly. And oh, prime reaction solution. We have mad science vaccines coming now. And now we have something even better. Remember, we got a shape-shifting immune system that's coming, doing gene therapy on all of us to be able to cure you from any pathogen, known or unknown. So put in a seatbelt for that one. They're still gearing up for that. But the end result of all this is it is not good for humanity. They are releasing this multifaceted, multi-pronged assault. Every bad idea, you know, I get this big notebook in my head called Bad Ideas. And on each page, we got a number. And, you know, I always just pick a number at random to assign to one. Bad idea 10,275. Gene drives. You know, what a gene drive allows you to do, take a genetic modification. And in this case, it would be one that would be synthetically made. And then roll it out through the entire population in one generation. So for something like a mosquito, the mosquitoes live a week, if that. So within a week, they could take some trait, and at least with the stuff they were experimenting with, it was, I think it was the gene that they had modified the mosquitoes with the kill switch, so they would require tetracycline. And if they didn't receive tetracycline, they would die. The eggs wouldn't mature. Except, surprise, tetracycline apparently is pretty prevalent in the environment because of livestock, etc. So it really didn't help much. But Long story short, gene drive technology is something that isn't just for mosquitoes. Gene drive technology is a technology that allows them to make a genetic change and then push that genetic change throughout the entire population. And I don't know. I haven't dug enough into gene drives. It's kind of like CRISPR, but it's CRISPR on steroids. But I haven't dug into gene drives enough to know, and I'm pretty sure whether or not these genetic changes could pass from generation to generation. Remember, we had looked at CRISPRing embryos. One of the big deals up until just recently was that you can CRISPR embryos in the lab now, wink. But the one thing you can't do is CRISPR traits that can be passed down to progeny. You can't CRISPR traits that can be sent to future generations. So that way, you won't mess up the human germline for the future. Well, just recently, they decided now that rule might just be out of window. Because guess what? There are genetic diseases that are heritable that, oh, just by CRISPRing embryos, we could cure them. And oh, guess what? China has already messed around with CRISPRing inheritable traits. And so we got to keep up with the Joneses there, Jenny. So I hate to tell you, we now have made it ethically okay to modify traits that will affect thousands of years of human progeny in the future. And that can't be a good thing at all. Because now, we used to kind of joke about laser beam eyes and fangs and wings. Well, that could happen. And it won't just be one generation of fanged wing Johnnies. Oh no. This could be like a whole new branch of humans. They could be like the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz. My daughter, she definitely gets. I try to explain this stuff to her. She's a very scientific little girl. So she gets what CRISPRing's all about. I've explained some of this to her. I found actually one of my old biology books. It's all on life science. So I gave that to her. I told her, get cracking on that thing. It's a huge textbook. But I mean, she's good now, but it's a couple grades beyond her. So I think it's good because she knows a lot more than, her age. So it might be right in line with her skill level and give her some stuff to really dig her teeth into. But, we've talked about genetic modification. She knows about it from food. And now she knows that they're messing with it with creatures. She was the one whose class had that one story that we covered about whether or not they should be doing hybrid pig human stuff. Remember, they asked that as like a debate question in third grade or something. So she gets it. She gets that there's some stuff going on here, and I've really tried to explain to her that we right now are just on this cusp of changing technology, so be ready for anything. And but one of the things that is disturbing is having a conversation with your child, and as she's putting her creativity to work, thinking about all these traits that we could add to, oh, I don't know, a horse. And we were envisioning what the creature would look like. It was really kind of a scary feeling because, like I said yesterday, Ray Kurzweil predicted 12 short years. He's thinking now that we will reach that singularity. I'm going to say, if things keep progressing at the speed they are and with that law of exponential returns, I think we might even reach it before 12 years from now. And, barring any big calamity, we should all pretty much be here, hopefully. Hopefully we don't all kick the bucket by then, but I would say 12 years or less, there's a pretty good chance that a good number of us who are hearing this broadcast right now will still be here 12 years from now or less. But definitely for any of the children that are around, again, barring any big calamity, those children will definitely be here. And they will have to live with this dystopic future that we see them planning. And the fact that we sat around on a Saturday envisioning CRISPR creatures. And of course, she wanted to know if we could make a unicorn Pegasus. Isn't that what every little kid dreams of? And I said, of course we could, honey. And we could even put big fangs and laser eyes on your Pegasus unicorn. Careful what you ask for. And that is true, by the way. Careful what you ask for. All right, so here's where we're going to kick it off. Speaking of Kurzweil, kind of got on a tangent, but we have been talking about transhumanism, longevity medicine. David Rockefeller kicked the bucket yesterday. Something interesting, too. There was not very much mainstream news, at least TV news. I saw a couple print articles, RT News and New York Times. Put out some stuff, but you didn't see any commentaries about the great philanthropist talking about all the things he's done and how he's influenced medicine and libraries and education. And he's part of the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, or Bilderberg, or how he knows Peter Thiel. No, you didn't see any of that. But it was kind of funny because I was having these weird little twangs yesterday going, interesting. When filthy, beyond filthy rich billionaires just happened to boop, drop dead. And then, yeah, he was 101. But also, we got all this mad science going on around him. I did a little research yesterday to discover that, oh, he does happen to be friends with Peter Thiel and Henry Kissinger, of course. And, took a look at some of these organizations, and I don't know, guys. I don't know. I don't know if he just dropped dead or did they tell him it was time to go underground? Wink. It's time to start your treatments for youth. But the funny thing was that it wasn't just me that thought that. One of my listeners, Camille, sent me a message, and she kind of was tossing around the same ideas. You know, these rich guys all stick together. That's all I gotta say. And when you're that filthy rich, and I mean filthy rich, yeah, the Piper's gonna finally get your number at some point. He had seven open heart surgeries, I read. But who has seven open heart surgeries and survives to tell the tale, number one? Kind of like the Queen the other day on her horse out horseback riding in 90. Nobody goes horseback riding in 90. Unless, of course, you're the queen. And I don't know, Rockefeller was looking pretty. He was looking pretty worse for the wear the last time I saw him. But still, I don't know, just keep an eye on him. Let's see what happens at the funeral or if they have any even type of memorial service. Because if they didn't start any type of longevity medicine, and he really did kick the bucket, one of the things that Camille had done some posts on was cryogenic research. And yeah, we talked about that way, way back. Woody Allen, Sleeper. If you ever saw that movie, if you haven't, that definitely was a good one for a Friday night. I haven't seen that movie in about 30 years, but that made me laugh my ass off. But cryogenics and suspended animation, especially, is something that they have been working on for a while. Suspended animation for some long distance space travel. They were talking to, you know, Alpha Centauri and Mars and some of these other things. Cryogenics, I'm trying to remember the study I read a while back. There was a small issue that they were still having with freezing cells and it was doing damage. But I thought I just caught something like just a day or two ago. Late at night upstairs, the other machine, it's not here right now, that they think they may have found the problem. And it had to do with this extra ice crystal or something that was crystallizing. And it was because of some chemical that we were picking up from our environment that was getting into our cells that was causing the problem for rejuvenation in cryogenics. But just pay attention because it is a science that is happening. Camille, in her research, had a link to apparently there is cryogenic estate planning that has been rolling out here. I knew nothing about this, but it sounds pretty interesting. If you're planning on living forever, we have a perpetual trust. You just put all your bazillions of dollars in here, and we'll lock it up for you for when you wake up 1,000 years from now. I mean, how crazy is that? But I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt it. You know, we have these multi-generational, extremely rich billionaires and all their heirs. You know, you can't take it with you, wink, but they're trying. And you got vampires like Peter Thiel out there messing around with sucking young blood to get younger again. So look out, people. There's a brave new world coming, and it is really a frightening place. So, all right, let's go back. June 2010, New York Times. Merely human? Well, it's so yesterday. This is 2010, so we're talking 7 years ago this story came out. Mountain View, California. On a Tuesday evening this spring, Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google, became part man and part machine, and about 40 people all gathered here at the NASA campus for a 9-day, $15,000 course at Singularity University, and they all saw it happen. Now, you know what? I'm just having flashbacks because, yes, we did read this story back a few months ago, I think. You guys remember that Singularity University course that was $15,000? We discovered that they're still offering those courses. They're like $8,000 now, but they're offering them to rich people and CEOs and things of that nature, chief executives. Here we go. Some of Silicon Valley's smartest and wealthiest people have embraced the singularity, and they believe that this technology may be the only way to solve the world's ills while also allowing people to seize control of the evolutionary process. We've talked about that as well. This is the self-directed evolution that people like George Church have been talking about. We want to put, well, not we, they want to put evolution into the hands of humans, where they will be responsible. They will be telling us what is a good trait, what is a bad trait, and who is obsolete. But for those who haven't noticed, Silicon Valley's most celebrated company, Google, works daily on building a giant brain. Ding, ding, ding. And we're 7 years into the future, and Kurzweil's in charge, and he's looking all evil, and it's getting bigger and faster and smarter. Google works daily on building a giant brain that harnesses the thinking power of humans in order to surpass the thinking power of humans. Ding-a-ling. And remember, I told you, everything we feed to the machine is making the machine smarter and brighter than us. Larry Page, Google's other co-founder, helped set up Singularity University in 2008, and the company has supported it with more than $250,000 in donations. Some of Google's earliest employees are, thanks to the personal donations of $100,000 each, among the university's founding members. The university represents a more concrete side to the singularity, focusing on introducing entrepreneurs to promising new technologies. Hundreds of students worldwide apply to snare one of the 80 available spots in a separate 10-week graduate course that costs $25,000 for 80 people at 25 grand each. You got to be cashing in on the singularity. Cha-ching. Chief executives, inventors, doctors, and investors jockey for admission to the more intimate 9-day courses called executive programs. Both courses include FaceTime with leading thinkers in the areas of nanotechnology, artificial intelligence, energy, biotech, robotics, and computing. And on a more millennialist and provocative note, the Singularity also offers a modern-day quasi-religious answer to the Fountain of Youth, ding-a-ding-a-ding, by affirming the notion that, yes, indeed, humans, or at least something they're derived from them, can have it all. We will transcend all limitations of our biology, says Raymond Kurzweil, ding, the inventor and businessman who is the singularity's most ubiquitous spokesman. I told you, they wheel Ray out every time they need to sell it. And he boasts that he intends to live for hundreds of years and resurrect the dead, including his own dead father. And that is what it means to be human, he says, to extend who we are. Now, guys, this was 2010, okay? 2010. We already saw the direction the ship had turned. I am establishing here that the connections between Google and Kurzweil go way beyond just a few years ago. And Kurzweil, I've been following him since the 90s. When I said he was just kind of the joke guy in the corner and we would all laugh at the crazy ideas that this guy Kurzweil had about connecting us to the internet. But of course, one person's utopia is another person's dystopia, and we've covered this as well. In the years since the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, we read Ted Kaczynski's manifesto the one day. We read it on air, at least the first page of it, and I was really surprised because for anyone who hasn't read it or knows anything about Ted Kaczynski except that, quote-unquote, he was the Unabomber, you've been misled a little bit. You know, I just thought it was this crazy guy who lived out in the woods in a shed somewhere and made bombs, but that isn't quite how it was all spun out. Well, maybe that was the narrative, but it isn't what it was all about. Kaczynski had been a professor, and he had gotten very, very anti-technology. He had gotten very upset about some things. I don't remember the entire circumstances. I think he was sending incendiaries to people that he wanted to stop the machine, maybe, but don't quote me. But if you read his little text document that he put out, his quote-unquote manifesto, it kept talking about technology and it moving forward and it enslaving us and how it had to end. Well, in his technobabble of his manifesto, he actually made a little bit of sense. And then we found an archive out of Wired magazine, and this one was from 2000. Bill Joy had been a big boy at, I think it was Oracle, maybe, or DEC Computing. One of the big boys that really, they're still around, but they've kind of changed form back from my day, the beginning days of commercialization of computing. But Bill Joy wrote a book, and he also knew Ray Kurzweil, and he had had conversation with Ray. And Ray's conversations kind of disturbed him after the fact. But Bill Joy wrote a book called How the Future Doesn't Need Us. And again, we're talking something, this literally was 17 years ago. And Bill had already seen the writing on the wall. If we continued down our current trajectory with Moore's Law and Law of Exponential Returns, that there was going to come a point in our not-too-distant future, and they were still telling us back then, 50, 100 years from now, it's going to be a different future. And we've been saying, no, it's not 100 years. It's not 100 years. They're going to tell you it's 100 years so you don't get afraid, but all of a sudden it's going to be bang. It's 20 years. Oh, bang, look, it's 5 now. Technology is just incredibly amazing. Look at how fast it's working. And then it's going to be the sneak attack. Because we never saw it coming. Be aware, it is coming. I don't know. We need to start learning robotics. Start messing around with frequencies. I don't know what to tell you, but we have this mixture of biology and technology and people like Ray Kurzweil, as well as many others, George Church, Mr. Synthetic Biology, we have these lunatics that are all puppeteering now how we are going to self-direct this human evolution to 2.0. And that's where they keep telling us that we need to go. It is tantamount for the survival of the human race. And look, we have climate change. Yeah. You know what I say? The climate is changing. But I don't think it's us making it, it's them. You know, the more I dig into some of this atmospheric, ionospheric heaters that they're building, and that was a research paper that I was just reading the other day. It was matter of fact, smarty pants, talking all about the ionospheric heaters that they're messing with up at the University of Alaska at the HAARP facility out of physics.org. Well, there's no way to deny now that they are messing around with the atmosphere. And literally, the one guy says, "We are turning the atmosphere into a big petri dish in a lab, and this is so amazing." But wait a second. Who said that was such a bright idea? Because now we have these wicked storms, we have all this heating going on, and all this energy getting pumped into the atmosphere, kind of like three melting down cores across the ocean would be pumping high energy particles into the atmosphere. Oh. You know, they discovered that. I don't know if you guys heard that interview I did with Jeff Wefferson this past weekend. He aired it Saturday and Sunday. And I think we talked about some of that. I don't know when he was actually recording and when he wasn't, or what he cut out or what he didn't. I didn't hear the final. But one of the things we have been talking about was atmospheric heating and some of the research in the past. And I discovered way back when some interesting connections between Fukushima, GE, the Manhattan Project, and HAARP. And this was not any tinfoil hat wearing website. This was Bruce Gagnon, an interview I had heard with him, with Libby Halevy, talking. And we ran that interview on the show for one of the days I couldn't make it. It was an excellent interview. But Bruce was talking about some of the experimentation they had been doing with excited particles and radiation experiments in space. We had looked at plasma bombing the sky and some of this new radio frequency extender technology that they are working on. And all I'm going to say, guys, and then, oh, Kurt Vonnegut's brother, Kurt Vonnegut, the author of Cat's Cradle and Happy Birthday, Wanda June, and all those other classic weird novels. Kurt Vonnegut actually was a PR person for GE back in like the 40s or the 50s. And his brother was an atmospheric scientist out of University of Albany here, which is actually where my good friend that I went to college with, one of my engineer friends, ended up getting his meteorology degree, was over there. He was a physicist at UB with me, and then he went over to the University of Albany and got his meteorology degree, which you would think it's just standing in front of a weather map, but it isn't. Meteorology is all high-end physics and math. So, Smarty Pants, Mr. Smarty Pants, and now he's doing, I don't know, some sort of bioinformatics on cancer cells at a cancer hospital. So, you know, again, Smarty Pants, not sure what atmospheric science has to do with that, but end result is they are utilizing all of these technologies that they are modifying our planet with, and they have been for a very, very long time, to now point to it and go, "Look, everything's so screwed up. And it's all your fault, people. So we're going to take everything away that you know and love, and we're going to clamp right down. We're going to have the COP21. We're going to cry climate change and carbon quotients. We're going to use it to manipulate and control the globe and to puppeteer the future where you become the slave. And we can clamp down on your open air prison because there's some new rules in the game here. But these new rules in the game, not being able to support 7 billion people, is going to lead to the scary future of CRISPRing and transhumanizing humans, all in the name of being able to survive in this new foreign environment that the Earth's ecosystem is going to turn into if they are allowed to terraform the planet, like the DARPA lady said. They were going to use these push-a-button, create-life technologies here on Earth first to clean up inhospitable places that have been, you know, polluted by corporations without a conscience, like there ever was such a thing, a corporation with a conscience. But we're going to use some of these new synthetic biology cures, these little microbes that we've programmed to be our, to do our bidding. Bacteria that eat oil. And I think, you know, they said they found some of those in nature, but they made special ones too. You know, viruses that supposedly go out and do good things because we put some new guts in them. And then after we test it here on Earth, we're going to use it to terraform Mars. That's that interview out of Motherboard magazine. I've quoted it a million times. You've read it. I referenced it in my notes. But that's what they're talking about. So don't worry about what's going on here. We'll be able to fix it, Johnny. I think that's what they're thinking. But I hate to tell you, we are not gods. We don't understand, even, you know, not just the environment, but even in genetics, we don't understand off targets. You touch one button and it messes up 22 others. And that's the problem right now. And it's kind of like I said the other day, telling lies. When you tell lies, one lie begets 12 more. And you better keep up then with all the lies and all the threads you have created, because eventually you'll get caught. Well, same thing with kind of what they're doing to our planet. All these lies and all these programs have now taken things to where the tempest is almost out of the bottle, and they've let a few genies go, and they're thinking still that they'll be able to control those genies like gene drive or CRISPR, democratized, or, I don't know, DIY gene kits in mommy's back bedroom. Or 1918 pandemic flus. We've taken out, we've spliced and diced a few times. We published all our results for scientists worldwide to read how we did it. But don't worry about it. It won't be used against you at some point in the future. Oh, no. And if it is, hey, wait, we got a solution for that, too. Shape-shifting immune system. Not even just by DARPA, but by IBM, too. It's just got to make you go, what? I mean, I couldn't even write a crazy novel like this. I just couldn't. Nobody would believe it. They'd be like, Joel, this is just so insane that they're going to literally want to put you in a straitjacket, cart you off somewhere. Don't publish it. But I hate to tell you, people, this is today's news. This is the type of stuff we've been covering. These are the types of things that just because you don't know it does not mean that it is not happening. Do your research. So anyway, let's get back to the story. So in the years since the Unabomber, Theodore J. Kaczynski violently inveighed against the predations of technology, plenty of other more sober and sophisticated warnings have arrived. There are camps of environmentalists who decry efforts to manipulate nature. Hey, that's funny. Like I was just saying, challenges from religious groups that see the singularity as a version of Frankenstein in which people play at being gods. Ding, ding, ding. I also covered Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in depth and did a paper on it in college. And technologists who fear a runaway artificial intelligence that subjugates humans. Hey, I guess I'm all of the above because, yes, Elon Musk, another smarty pants, comes out and says we need to augment our brains with a neural lace. So in the future, we'll be able to keep up with the super intelligent AI that we are building. A popular network television show called Fringe, and I still haven't watched it. I know there were a couple listeners out there who told me, I gotta see it, I gotta see it. Guys, I promise you I will see it one day. Playfully explore some of these concerns by featuring a mad scientist, I wonder they think of me, and a team of federal agents investigating crimes relating to the pattern, which is an influx of threatening events caused by out-of-control technology like computer programs that melt brains. Oh, yeah, you gotta love those. And genetically engineered chimeras. Uh-oh, is that like the Minotaur that goes on a killing spree? Yeah, with big pointy teeth and laser beam eyes. Hey, guys, this is out of the New York Times, okay? And this is from 7 years ago, okay? All this stuff has kind of happened already. That's why I'm reading this to you, to point out that this is not a fantasy. This is stuff that they all called for. We were already all standing up, jumping up and down. I don't know, back in 2010. 2010, I might have just been coming to this conclusion. I definitely had some issues with surveillance, because remember, surveillance we had already known about, at least on the record, since about 2004. And that was one of the big AT&T cover-your-ass moments where the feds wanted records, and AT&T was getting sued by privacy advocates. And AT&T went up in front of the FCC and said, hey, you guys, you feds want my records? You're going to pull me into this and drag my name through the mud and get my stockholders all pissed off at me and make my stock price fall? That isn't going to happen. So I'm not giving you the records unless you give me a cover my ass rubber stamp right on the left cheek to say that anytime you come to me, you've twisted my arm so high up my back that I can't say no. That way, it absolves me of any liability whatsoever in the future from anybody suing us again. Don't make it my fault. You be the bad guy. I'm not going to be the bad guy. And that's what happened. So 2004, we already were on to what was happening on the back end and how this technology was kind of being shaped and groomed. They were playing this game, good cop, bad cop. I told you that. They've been playing that for a while. Good old Billy Gates, Billy, has been in the middle for a very long time. Since we discovered October, November of 2001, when he handed over the keys to the feds, when they finally decided that they were going to give him a slap upside the head and let him get off scot-free, pretty much, for that antitrust lawsuit that started in the 90s that was brought on by Netscape. When they released Windows 95 with the integrated web browser, Netscape said, hey, unfair competition. Nobody's going to buy my shit if you include it in yours. And they fought about that for 5 or 6 years. And then they finally settled. And Billy Gates, right after 9/11, Billy Gates came out and said he settled with the feds and they were going to let him go and continue along with his monopoly. I told you that look on his face. I knew it. I knew what he had done. He had a quotation about, well, we are going to have to do business very differently. But he agreed to it. And he never admitted guilt. He just agreed to follow what the feds told him to do. Anyway. So, yeah, we could have, you know, computer programs that melt brains in the future. Or genetically engineered chimeras that go on killing sprees. But some of the singularities, adherents portray a future where humans break off into two species. And this is kind of where I really think we're headed. There will be the haves, those who have superior intelligence and can live for hundreds of years. And then the have-nots, or like I like to call them, the Luddites. I'm going to be on this team. Those who are hampered by their antiquated corporeal forms and beliefs, i.e. human 1.0. And of course, some people will opt for inadequacy, if that's what you want to call it, while others will have their inadequacy thrust upon them. Critics find such scenarios unnerving because the key to the next phase of evolution may be beyond the grasp of most people. Now, guys, too, That's the other thing. This 21st Century Cures Act, we've talked about all this, precision medicine, the Brain Initiative, and all this mad science-y stuff, CRISPRing, that's rolling out all these new therapies right now, getting the FDA out of the way. So that approval process is just fast-tracked. So we can now go to clinical trials. Anyone who is desperate enough and has some cash can step right up. We'll try our new treatment on you. And if it all works out, hey, good luck to you there, Jenny, in the future. And we'll write a case study and we'll use you as a marketing tool. We'll do pictures of your pretty eyes and we'll put them on the banner. You got to be the guinea pig for history. Then we're going to roll this treatment out to who? Oh, the rich tech billionaires and people like Rockefeller and Thiel and Kissinger and all the other cronies out there. Gates, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, Ray Kurzweil. He can add it to his 175-pill daily cocktail he takes. But, you know, the thing is, in the end, this is not for you and me. See, we make the good experimental petri dish because we're just so willing and so gullible. And when they have mistakes, when little Johnny starts pumping into walls, they know they did something wrong. Back to the drawing board. Then they'll come back and they'll try it again because there's millions of us that'll step right up. We've seen that. They just step right up. They'll believe it. Dangling carrots. We will cure you, nanobots in your blood. We could never figure out who would step up for nanobots in their blood. Well, a cure for cancer will do that to you. So some people will opt for inadequacy. And this next phase of evolution may be beyond the grasp of most people. The singularity is not the great vision for society that Lenin had or Milton Friedman might have, says Andrew Orlowski, a British journalist who has written extensively on techno-utopianism. He says it is the rich people building a lifeboat and getting off the ship, unquote. Ding-a-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-ding. How many times have we said that? And that would also explain why all the rich guys are all excited over their new rocketry divisions and why they're all shooting for Mars. They're planning on getting the hell off this rock, and it is not going to be you or me. Sure, the first 100 to Mars are again going to be the 1.0 petri dish. See whether or not there's any creepy crawlies on Mars that are going to infect your brain, or if you're going to get squished by the gravity and the pressure there. But once you guys figure out that it's A-okay, they're going to be coming in droves. And it's not going to be Nana and Uncle Chet. It's going to be the rich guys. It's going to be Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Ray Kurzweil. And speaking of Peter Thiel, ho, isn't he the next one that comes up in this story? Peter A. Thiel, a co-founder of PayPal and a major investor in Facebook. Oh, don't we learn something new about him every day? I didn't know that. Is a singularity devotee who offers a singularity or bust scenario. Now remember, Peter Thiel is also friends, was friends, with Rockefeller, who just kicked the bucket. It may not happen, he says, but there are a lot of technologies that need to be developed for a whole series of problems to be solved. I think there is no good future in which that it doesn't happen. So in other words, happen or we're done for. In late August of 2010, Mr. Kurzweil began a cross-country multimedia roadshow. Bing, bing, I told you they roll them out every once in a while. To promote Transcendent Man, a documentary about his life and beliefs. We should see if we could find that on YouTube. That would be a good one to watch. Another of Kurzweil's project is called The Singularity is Near, a true story about the future. And it has also started to make its way around the film festival circuit. So he's got two movies that we should watch. And through Transcendent Man, Kurzweil is presented almost as a mystic sitting in a chair with a shimmering circular light floating around his head. Oh, God. Did they do this like a Jesus figurine? Come on. You know, people watch that and they're like, oh, and they hear angels singing. That's what he's trying to do. I told you, they literally are trying to make themselves godlike. Kurzweil is part of that unholy trinity. Guys, this is something very bad happening. There's nothing like this, at least in our written history, that has ever happened before. So when I keep jumping up and down, and I mean literally, we're talking years now, that I've been jumping up and down trying to get this warning out to the world. You know, my 27 listeners, please spread it around. Because, you know, if you've listened to me for a while, I know probably the first couple times you heard me, you're like, holy shit, this girl is crazy. But look, she's reading stories out of the New York Times. Yeah, well, I'm actually not crazy. I've been in this field for a very long time. I've just been watching it very closely. And now I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore because I have a kid. And it's happening before our eyes. And it's all under the covers. And it's really kind of on the QT, except for those in the know. Or those that know how to decode what they're talking about. Because they use this language and they make it sound all nice and they package it all up and they're like, but look, it doesn't matter what we're doing, you're just gonna live forever, we're gonna just cure their cancer, and that's all anybody hears. Yeah, they put the marketing spin, but that 7 second attention span is really hurting, because if you don't look under the covers, you go, oh my god, if you actually understood what they are talking about. So throughout Transcendent Man, Mr. Kurzweil is presented as almost a mystic sitting in a chair with a shimmering circular light floating around his head as he explains his philosophy's basic tenets. And during one scene at the beach, he is asked what he is thinking as he stares out on a beautiful sunset with waves rolling in and the wind tussling his hair. Oh my God. Well, he says, I was thinking about how much computation is represented by the ocean, he says. I mean, it's all these water molecules interacting with each other. That is computation. Have a look out, because they'll make it the live next. Mr. Kurzweil is the writer, producer, and co-director of The Singularity is Near, The Tale of Ramona. Oh, no, this is his Ramona the alter ego. We've talked about that before, too. The female alter ego that he wants to be when he gets sucked into the machine. A virtual being that he builds that gradually becomes more human, battles hordes of microscopic robots. Oh, no. Nanobots are coming. And taps the lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, for legal advice. And motivation guru Tony Robbins for guidance on personal interactions. And with his glasses, his receding hairline, and lecturer's ease, Mr. Kurzweil, who was 62 7 years ago, that makes him 69 now, seems more professor than thespian. His films are just another facet of the Kurzweil franchise, which includes his best-selling books, his lucrative speaking engagements, his blockbuster inventions, and a line of health supplements called Ray and Terry. So I didn't know about that either. Developed with physician Terry Grossman. So Kurzweil began his march toward the singularity around 1980. When he started plotting things like the speeds of chips and the memory capacity inside computers and realized that some of the elements of information technology improved at predictable and exponential rates. Ding, ding. We've talked about it many times. This is law of exponential returns. And with 30 linear steps, you get 30, he says. But with 30 steps exponentially, you get to 1 billion. The price performance of computers has improved a billion times since he originally was a student, and in 25 years, and seriously, I mean, a hard drive the size of a brick back in 1982. It was like $800, if I remember correctly. My dad had to buy a hard drive because it was, came with some insane, like, kilobytes. And, he got an upgrade. And it was a big, fat chunk of change. He had a bonus at that year. And he spent it on a hard drive the size of a brick. In 25 years, a computer as powerful as today's smartphones will be the size of a blood cell, or I'm going to add, or a nanobot. His fascination with exponential trends eventually led him to construct an elaborate philosophy illustrated in charts that provided an analytical backbone for the singularity and other ideas that have been floating around science fiction circles for decades. The underlying premise of the singularity responds to people's insecurity about the speed of social and technological change in the computer era. And Mr. Kurzweil posits that the computer and the internet age have changed society much faster than electricity or phones or television, and that our next great leap will occur when technologies and industries like medicine and energy start moving at the same pace as information technology. Guys, the medicine has done it. 21st Century Cures Act, precision medicine. They have done it, people, in the 70s, well before the era of nanobot doctors. And it actually says that Mr. Kurzweil's father died of a heart attack in his home in Queens, New York. He was 58 and Ray was 22. And since then, Kurzweil has filled a storage space with his father's effects, in the hope that someday when computers and humans merge, that he might be able, with memories harvested from his own brain and his dad's DNA, partially or completely resurrect his dad. And we're going to leave it at that today. We will continue with Ray, Singularity and the Coming of the Future tomorrow. Have an awesome Tuesday.